Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Red Leg Nation Radio. This is episode number 399 of the world's most dangerous podcast. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. With me again this week, a frequent guest here. I'm glad to have him back again. It's at least two or three times now we've talked around this time of year. Always excited to do that. It's my buddy Freak Base. How are you?
Hey, how you doing? It's good to hear your voice, and thanks. Excited to be back on the show for sure.
Absolutely. Now, Freak Bass, you know, because the music that you hear, the intro before the show, that's off the bass guitar of Freak Bass, who's a funk bassist and just fantastic. And you know, we gave a little teaser for the intro to our new podcast that we're getting ready to relaunch. I mean, same podcast, just changed the name and rebranding a little bit, but. New Freak Bass music in that video as well. Thank you very much for contributing as you have over the years to this dangerous podcast.
Oh, I mean, I'm very, 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 you know, happy and honored that you asked me to be a part of it. And I always like, you know, I'm a you know, fan of the podcast, obviously, too. And it's always good to, you know, hear. I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot how to play that one, you know, and because some of those songs we don't like Milk Hunt, which is the one that mm-hmm. you have on now. We play it every once in a while, but we don't play it a whole lot live. So it's good to get that back in the ears. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. So now we appreciate it as well. And of course, and the reason you're on is not just because, you know, I like talking to you. We like to talk about, you know, movies, all kinds of things, but it's Cincinnati Reds here, and we will talk a little movies later, but but you're born and raised in Cincinnati, I guess?
I am, and you know, it's the Reds have been a, you know, a part of my life for as long as I can remember. My mom was a huge Reds fan, and brought me to games when I was little, and they were always in my house. I played baseball when I was a kid, you know, up until 13, 14, when I basically got my guitar and bass, and then I was like, oh, that seems to, that's kind of where I started heading, and I didn't think I was going to, you know, I knew I could play bass, but it was with BASS. That was kind of more my thing without the SC. So, yeah.
There you go. So, we're going to do a deep dive into what's going on in the world of the Cincinnati Reds. And I always like talking to you because, you know, you try to stay relentlessly optimistic, which I definitely appreciate. And so, there's some things I need to hear your take on that have happened recently. But
sure.
Before we do that, November 26th. Funksgiving. Tell me about Funksgiving on November 26th, the concert you got.
Yeah, well, I mean, first off, excited to be – we haven't played Cincinnati, you know, in over – not pushing on 2 years now because of the pandemic. And we have played some shows. We played some outside festival shows over the summer, but none in the area. And you know, we had started this tradition. I mean, what would have been, I guess this year, would have been like our eighth or ninth year in a row had you included last year of – always playing the day after Thanksgiving. And so we started calling it Funksgiving because it kind of went along with the holiday. And we've been doing them mostly at the Southgate House over the last few years. But right before the pandemic, we started playing at a newer venue in Cincinnati, which is called Ludlow Garage on Ludlow Avenue and Clifton. And Ludlow Garage, besides, I used to live on Ludlow for a real long time, so that was kind of neat. But the venue itself, you know, it's got this amazing history. You know, back in the 70s, you know, everybody from Allman Brothers to Grateful Dead, I believe, Frank Zappa, like any band that was a touring band at that time would come through the Ludlow Garage. And I think I was telling you before we went on tonight that I think, and don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure there's actually like a Allman Brothers, like a Live from the Ludlow Garage album out there, or maybe it's just something that's floating around the internet. But it's, you know, it definitely had this really great musical history. And and it, you know, and a few years ago they opened it back up, and it's Kevin Blum, who used to run I used to book the club Ripley's in Cincinnati back when I first started playing live shows right out of high school, is now bringing all the bands in there, and he's an incredible talent buyer and great guy, really knows how to put on good shows. And you know, he said, you know, why don't we do this year, since it's your first time back to Cincinnati in almost 2 years, why don't we kind of make it a whole big event? And so, so here we are. So this Friday will be the first time we play Cincinnati again, at least 18 months, I guess. And Friday, November 26th, it's an all ages show. Tickets are available now everywhere, and they're going fast, which is really nice to hear. I think people are really excited to get out. I can't wait to actually see people in person. I've been doing tons of online stuff over the last year, but it's, you know, haven't really seen a lot of people up close. So, and we got Sammy Garrett flying in from New York, who, you know, has sung with me a lot. She plays in another group called Turquoise. And she's the one. Sammy's actually the one. Speaking of the Reds, Sammy's the one when we did the national anthem. She did the national anthem with me down at Great American Ballpark. The 2019 season. So it's going to be a great event. We got some crazy stuff planned in terms of like the show itself. Talking about movies, I'm not going to give out too much hints about it, but it's going to be a crazy, crazy show. So I hope everybody that can come out, you know, it's a great day to come. You know, we did it always. The reason we chose that day, even years ago, a lot of people are in town for the holidays, you know, visit their families and stuff. So we thought it would be a nice day to do that. So that's it. I think that's pretty much everything.
Yeah, outstanding. You know, I'm still don't understand how you've been asked to do the national anthem at Great American Ballpark, and they haven't asked me yet.
Hey, it's your day. Will come. It's coming. They're just looking for that right. Maybe they're. You know what it is? They're waiting for you for the World Series. Is what it is. That's what it is.
Yes. Well. Yes. Okay.
I hope. Which is a whole other subject.
Right? I hope that I'm still able to walk out onto the field by the time they make it back to the, the World Series. So let's talk about the Reds and you know, going back to music just for a moment, I guess, is really the first time I came across your work was this. Album of Reds tunes that they put out? Like, it had to be like 2004, 2005. And what was it called? See, I should have. This is all the prep work you get for the World's Most Dangerous Podcast. But you had a song on that album that I loved, and I heard it at the stadium. I was like, what is that? Reds Fan was the name of it. So can you give me the genesis of that before we talk about current day Reds? Because I know a lot of people, certainly of my generation, heard that album, and it was a fun thing at the time.
Yeah. So David Storm, and David was he used to do all the scoreboard operations at Great American Ballpark. He's now with the Orlando Magic. He runs the whole. All the anything to do with entertainment or like the visuals, anything that's not basketball related that you see at a basketball game, David does all that now. He's like obviously moved up over the last few years, but David used to do this for the Reds, and he was a fan of Freak Bass, and so and he knew I was a fanatical Reds fan as well, and so he called me. It wasn't just me; it was everybody, a bunch of the bands. I think the Psycho Dots did a song, and a lot of bands around the Cincinnati area. And they said they're putting out a CD for the Reds Community Fund. It was to raise funds for the Reds Community Fund. And if I would be interested in writing a song about the Reds. And, of course, I was like, you know, yes, gosh, of course. And so it was really neat, the evolution of the song. First off, like right off the bat, I wanted to make a song that was going to be timeless in the sense, like at first I was real tempted, you know, that was Adam Dunn was playing for the Reds then, obviously Ken Griffey Jr. So I was real tempted to start, you know, doing some name drops and pull those into lyrics. I'm like, you know what? I want this song to hopefully 10 or 15 years from now, even 30 years from now, who knows, still be able to, you know, people will be able to sing it and play it and stuff like that. So I tried to keep it real. I'm a Reds fan. Doesn't matter what era you're from, whether you're from the, you know, the 40s and 50s or you're from the 2050s. And so it was just basically about, you know, the lyrics were about being a Reds fan. I'm a Reds fan. And that lyric stuck, and it was pretty easy for me to write lyrically because of basically I just jotted down like the reasons I was a Reds fan and put a little groove to it essentially. And then, you know, after the song started getting a little traction and they started playing it at the ballpark, like I think they still do actually nightly after the games. But he said a year or so went by and he said, hey, would you be into doing a video for the song too? And I was like, oh my gosh, yeah. So I think it was the summer of 2007, I think, we went down and to the ballpark during a game. As a matter of fact, I even remember who was pitching that night. Eric Milton was pitching that night. That's taking you back. Yes, the mighty Eric Milton. And so we filmed the whole, like we went through the crowd, we did it on the field, you know, before or after the game. And so then a couple years went by that, you know, well, 2010 happened, obviously. And so I went in the studio, kind of remixed it, updated the song a little bit. And we did another video, brought Bootsy in and some other local personalities and stuff. I think Kim Brew was in it. And And you know, every few years, you know, as the Reds got into the playoffs, we would update the song. I think there's been like three video versions of it so far, and with little updates to the mixing and stuff. So it's kind of stood the test of time. You know, I mean, it's a, you know, a message anybody understands. I'm a Reds fan. That's what I am. And I'm just, you know, super excited that they're still actually, you know, that the people still even know what the song is. I still get people coming up to me. Here, I'll tell you actually a really funny story, actually, real quick. And then we played down at the Reds game and played. This is like 2012, 2013. And so I was done up in all my crazy freak bass garb. And a gentleman walked up to me and he's like, I'm a season ticket holder. I love your song. We listen to it every night on the way to the radio. He thought that I was almost like a gapper, like the Reds hired me. Like, he didn't know I was playing there. He thought I was just, they dressed me up like quote unquote freak bass. And then I'm like one of the people they put around the ballpark and go and meet and greet people, which I thought was like, I'm like, that sounds cool. I would love to do that. That'd be great. So it was really funny. Cause he didn't even know we were playing. And it was just, that was a funny story,
but great.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, yeah, it was, I'm always pinched myself about that. And then of course you mentioned the national anthem thing was like, well, oh, and real quick, then that same year, actually, they had me come out and throw the first pitch too, as well. So, which was incredible, incredibly nerve wracking too, if you've never done it. And then this past, well, 2019, not past season, but 2019, they asked if, you know, we'd be willing to do the national anthem, and that was like the, you know, that was something that I've dreamt since I've been
sure
practically picked up the bass, you know. And you know, I've obviously seen Flea does it with when he does the Los Angeles Lakers, you know, for his team. And I know Fish had done it for the Cubs before. And so, you know, that was always a dream of mine, and to be able to do that, you know, it was that whole experience still seems super freaking surreal to me that even happened. So it's crazy stuff.
Yeah, well, for those of you that are listening, imagine if, you know, as big a Reds fan as you are, if you got to sing the national anthem throughout the first pitch. I mean, that's the way, the reason I frame it like that is, you know, I know you're a extremely talented musician, but you have this kind of thing that we all have that's kind of infected us, unfortunately, with the Cincinnati Reds.
Yep.
And the reason I wanted to mention Reds fan, the song Reds fan as well, is that's a really good intro. For those of you that aren't necessarily familiar with your music, that's a great intro for this audience to kind of see what your musical sensibilities are, I guess. I think it's a great intro to me.
Yeah, I agree. And it's like, you know, that song, you know, even on a musical, besides even what the lyrical content is based on, even on like a musical side, you know, I produced that all in the studio. I think it's a good, from growing up in Cincinnati, my funk history, Cincinnati's funk history, is, you know, it's not just the Reds. It's also like this whole musical history that we have here in Cincinnati. I think it really, you know, kind of encapsulates a lot of that in that song itself too, or at least I tried to as good as I could.
Well, it's great. I'll say this, one of those times that you, did a video for the song, you reached out to me and said, hey, why don't you show up here at this time and be in the video with us, and I just couldn't get away to do it. I wanted to.
Was a 2010 version. I remember that. Yeah.
So the next, I'm just telling you now, the next time you do an updated video, I will be there. I'll change things to whatever I have to do to be there for that video.
When they go to the World Series this year, we'll do it then. All
bingo,
right.
Man.
There we go.
Oh, from your mouth to God's ear, as they say. Let's talk about the Reds now. It's been an interesting couple weeks for the Reds. You know, we've not done a live podcast. We're on a bit of a hiatus as we get ready to relaunch, as I said, and so we've talked about what's going on. But now that we've had a little bit of time to kind of digest what's been going on in Reds world here recently, I mean, I'm really interested to hear what you think about these. The trade of Tucker Barnhart. Nick Castellanos, exercising his option and taking off, and the Reds probably not going to get him back. Maybe. We'll see. And then, of course, losing Wade Miley on waivers. And I was fairly critical, as I am sometimes. I go back and forth between. I really want to be optimistic because I love this team, and I want to think the best about it. But then I see some things that happen, and it grinds my gears, as Peter Griffin would say. it was a tough week to be a Reds fan when all that was going on, I guess. And then Nick Kroll saying, yeah, well, we got to get rid of money. To me, it was really difficult to hear because, oh no, we're doing this thing again. How did all that, you know, how are you working through all that as a fan?
You know, none of it, with the exception of maybe the Miley thing, nothing was that surprising to me. I mean, I think we all knew the Barnhart thing was probably going to happen. And, you know, there's part of me, it's like, as we know, and you've discussed even on your show, it's obviously Stevenson's time to shine now. I mean, he, you know, and not that they couldn't have kept him, obviously, and, you know, and had them still work in tandem like they have been. But, you know, I think I get it, you know, and I'm maybe I'm super, super crazy naive and I'm reading between the lines too much, but I still have a small amount of hope that Castellanos still may be in a Reds uniform next season. You know, again, another thing you mentioned on the show, one of the reasons he did flourish so much is obviously his numbers, you know, were great all year, but they were exceptionally great in Great American Ballpark, as we know. And the way that the Reds have embraced him, the fans, and, you know, them even putting him up on the huge billboard, you know, that which almost like that iconic shot with the, you know, him like screaming over the Cardinals.
The best,
that's such a great, I mean, that's like timeless. And so, you know, if we were having this conversation, I guess maybe in late December, early January, I might have a different take on it. But still being November now, you know, the way that they've communicated a lot of the moves to the press has been, you know, definitely clumsy, I guess is the easy way to say it.
Less than ideal. Yes.
Yes. Less than ideal. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, I always wonder, you know, like the year that the Kansas City Royals went to the World Series, did, you know, were they like, was the Kansas City version of your podcast, were those people kind of having those same conversations that we're having right now? I mean, I don't know, but you know what I'm saying? So, baseball is such a, as you know, it's all about getting to the playoffs, as you always say. And it's just like, once you're there, then anything, it's anybody's ball game. But, I'm still up again, if it gets to be January, February, and this kind of craziness is still going on. As much of a glass half full guy as I am, there's a lot of questions. It's not, you know, the catcher question is not, that's not even something I'm really even worried about. Even at least the starting pitching, maybe I should be more worried about it with the Wade Miley thing, but I'm not yet.
I mean, I get it.
Relief pitching, different story, but starting pitching, not, but you know, third base, you know, what's going to happen there? If Castellanos doesn't come back and my dreams aren't answered, right field, you know, center field, you know, so you've got like, those are the questions that I'm really, I hope that whatever, however they're allocating their funds and they're, you know, shifting this to here to there, that there is a plan for that. I mean, again, you know, that's my optimistic self.
I get it. And there are a couple things there I want to try to unpack for just a moment. You know, to me, you're a loyal viewer of the podcast. You know, I'm reading between the lines, and I know what they did when they got rid of Rosell Iglesias and Archie Bradley last year, and they didn't reallocate those funds. And
right, you're
right. And then the things that every time that, and my problem with the Tucker Barnhart trade, as I said at the time, was not that they traded Tucker. I mean, I love Tucker. I wanted Tucker to be a lifetime Red, frankly.
Sure, me too, yeah.
Backup catcher, whatever. It's not a huge deal in the scheme of things, and not surprising, really. But just that every time they open their mouth, Nick Kroll opens his mouth, it's we're poor. And to me, that signaled something that concerned me. But the flip side is the Reds won 83 games this year, you know? And they do have some holes that you've identified, but they're really not that far from – how many games did the Braves win? 87, 88? The Atlanta Braves are the 2021 World Series champions.
And so, they were under 500 in early August. I have a friend that's a like hardcore Braves fan, and I'd hear about them almost every day. And, yeah, they were – you know, I think early August they were under 500, you know, so
– yeah.
You know,
so that's what frustrates me more, is that I'm reading between the lines, but I also see a Reds team that, you know, you don't have to do a whole lot to improve them to be a competitive team. And that's frustrating to me, but you're also saying something, not, you're not using the words that I always use, but you're saying something that I say all the time, which is, well, let's not get you know, upset about a problem or something about the Reds doing something they haven't done yet. We don't know that they're not gonna you know, improve the team. I think there's some signs they're not, but I can't remember who it is. I think Calvin Coolidge once said, if you see 10 problems rolling down the road at you, just stand still. 9 of them are going to roll into the ditch. You don't have to worry about them. So let's not get too upset before the problem actually gets here. But the other thing I want to say was, anything you have to say about that before I move on? I want to talk about Castellanos.
No. I go ahead. Yeah, just continue on. Yes.
Okay. With respect to Castellanos, I think that there is a – I don't think he's coming back to Cincinnati. If I were a betting man, that's what I would bet.
Sure.
I don't know if they have that on you know, DraftKings. Prop bet for that. But I think that you're not wrong at all. I think there's a better chance that he returns than anyone recognizes for a number of reasons. You mentioned a bunch of them. You know, Cincinnati was good to him in terms of the stadium and in terms of the fan base. He became a star here.
Yeah.
Won a Silver Slugger this week. You know, Joey Votto got robbed again, but Nick Castellanos won the Silver Slugger Award, and he now has one more Silver Slugger Awards than Joey Votto has, which, come on.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
The other things, though, that are out there are that we don't know how the... So that's my first argument. He has a lot of reasons to like Cincinnati. Now, it's going to come down to money, ultimately, as it does most of the time. And Scott Boras is his agent. But still, that is a column in our favor. The other is that we don't know how this free agent market is going to go.
Yeah.
And it's not been good the last couple of years. And we have this looming, potentially, a work stoppage coming with the collective bargaining agreement expiring, and we just don't know what's going to happen. So things could get crazy. And, you know, what if he came back to the Reds and said, okay, let's sign 2 years for slightly more than what was on the 2 years that I opted out of. Mm-hmm. Now, is Bob Castellini, or really Bob's not in charge anymore, it's Phil Castellini, according to what I'm being told, but are they going to say, okay, we'll pay you that? I don't know that answer, but I think that it's not impossible that he comes back. Now, have I persuaded anyone? I'm supposed to be an attorney during the day, and I just I'm not sure I made a great argument there, but that's my argument. What do you think?
Well, and let me ask you this: you know, you keep bringing up the money thing. Do you think it's money or do you think it's years? I mean, I know it's both. I get that, but I'm saying, like, you know, like let's say your argument about, or your, no, your, or your, not argument, but like your scenario where he would come to the Reds and say, hey, to give me 2 more years, but let's add some more money to that and I'm here. Or do you think it might be more along the lines of add a few more years to that? You know, we'll keep the same money that you're giving me for the next 2 years, but let's add 2 or 3 more years onto that. You know what I mean? More that scenario. To me, that seems like, you know, if he's, you know, he seems like definitely a big family guy. His kids love it. I mean, if I was like wanted a little stability in my life, that would be more where I would be angling for, would be the years versus necessarily just trying to get more chunk of money during a smaller period. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's absolutely a great point. And I don't know, without knowing Castellanos personally, you're the one that's on the field at Great American Ballpark all the time. You probably know him better than I do. But without knowing, it's hard to say. I think that's what most people want, security and stability.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is, though, he'll never have a better chance of getting that long-term contract than right now. This is the best year he's ever had.
Oh, for sure.
He needs one team to pay him. But maybe teams are going to be hesitant to do that. We don't know. I think actually a more likely scenario of him returning would not be a long-term contract with the Reds. I don't see him coming back on a long-term contract with the Reds. I just don't see the Reds laying out that money. I hope I'm wrong. I could see him come back on a one-year deal.
So you think it's more on the Reds would try to make it a shorter deal versus him trying to make it a shorter deal?
No, I think both. I think if he's not seeing the numbers he wants to see in the free agent market and with all this you know, uncertainty given the collective bargaining agreement, he may say, okay, I'm going to bet on myself for 1 year.
Right, I gotcha.
And, you know, or maybe, you know what, that's why I say 2 years. Maybe be able to opt out after next year as well. Something like that.
Right.
I'll bet on myself. I'll have another great year, and then next year things will be more settled. We'll be even further away from, you know, the 2020 craziness, and the collective bargaining agreement will be ironed out, and so then I can really cash in and sign a 5-year deal somewhere for big money, get that certainty. I don't know. I'm kind of thinking through this in my head as we talk, because again, I don't do any preparation before these things.
Right.
But there's a path, I think, to him coming back. And again, this may be me just trying to be optimistic as well, but I think it's realistic. There's a path for him to return.
Yeah, I think so too. And, you know, again, you know, it was earlier in the Castellini's, you know, ownership, obviously, when this all went down. It was, they were only, what, 4 or 5 years in at that point. But still, I mean, I still would have never, even to this day, was even back then, even what I knew then, back then, I'm not Monday morning quarterbacking on this, I still would have never predicted the Votto thing in a million years. That's still, even to this day, still blows me away that he's still a Cincinnati Red. I'm like, that's still, it's just like, I just didn't think that, you know, and I just didn't think it was going to happen. You know, we all talked about it. We all thought the same thing. There's no way this guy's going to be in Toronto or, you know, the Yankees or whatever, you know, it's like, I just never would have thought. And, you know, here he is still, you know, still here. So I, you know, you never know, you never know, and I think, you know, that's this talk about this in a money way. And since that's obviously a big thing, and like, let's think about, I know you guys were talking a couple weeks ago, I think it was you and Chris Garber, if I remember, I was talking about the comparing the Reds to the Tampa Bay Rays in terms of like the way it's run. And, you know, did they get more bang for their buck from selling Votto jerseys over the last 10 years or whatever than they would have going to necessarily one World Series? You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
You know, so maybe, you know, Castellanos has that same kind of star power that Votto has. He definitely, as we see, I mean, he's, you know, incredible
in Cincinnati,
camera certainly. And for sure. Yeah. Which is all that matters to them, you know. And so maybe they're like, you know, he's someone that we could invest in this because we're going to make, just on our merchandise sales alone, we're going to make a chunk of that back. You know, that's just something to think about. You know?
No, you're absolutely correct. I mean, that's an interesting thought. Yeah. If you're looking for a guy to market. He came in and just blew everyone away, frankly, and not because he's necessarily that personable or camera friendly or anything like that, but he plays his butt off, and he does have a little bit of this personality, like, I want to win, you know. It kind of comes across, and I think Reds fans took to it, you know, that flex.
Well, I mean, they use that you know, that one, you know, on even the Reds official Twitter page, they every time they won, they use that little clip of him every single day. I mean, you know, win or whatever it was. I think it was just like a little gif that they had that they would show every day of him, you know. And so he's very, you know, he's very, since, you know, quote unquote Cincinnati, you know, people like that shot of him like leaning over Molina there, you know, in the dirt, that was just, I mean, that was, you couldn't have painted a better picture of that, you know. So,
well, that's,
you know, who knows.
That's a great point. You say, quote unquote, he's quote unquote Cincinnati. I think to an ownership group that really wanted to care about this, that's where I get hung up. I'm not sure they care enough, but he is the type of guy that has traditionally appealed to Cincinnati Reds fans in some ways.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's hard nosed. He's, you know, win at all costs. And, you know, he plays hard all the time. So if you were suspect about reasons for why Reds fans like certain players, you might say he's white. I'm not going to get into that conversation today, but he's the typical, you know, Chris Sabo type guy, except, you know,
right.
Except he was a Silver Slugger winner. He was an all-star. I mean,
plus, I don't mean to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
But also plus, if they made that one move that, you know, just got him back, a lot of other moves that, you know, that people might get worked up or upset about, they'd be able to hang their hat on that one move.
It'll whitewash,
you know what I mean?
It. Interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, that's another thing to think about too as well. You know, it's like how we did with Votto. You know, we always had Joey, no matter how good or bad the Reds got, we always had him around to always hang our hat on, you know, and he'd be like another version of that, you know, so something else, you know.
So from a PR perspective, that even if the Castellanos wanted to slash and cut payroll and kind of be cheap again, they could still kind of, from a PR perspective, paper that over by just bringing Castellanos back. Because then people will think, oh, they're bringing back the guy we love. And so I think all the people, the casual fans that aren't really paying attention would say, all right, I'm all in again. You give me some things to think about. This is why I have you on, man.
Well, yeah, and I think if you do, you know, and not even just a matter of, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, I think the whole nother podcast, but I think, you know, everybody wants to win. Castellini's want to win too. Everybody wants to win. Everybody knows winning causes, even if it's strictly about money, everybody knows winning cause, you know, puts more butts in the seats. You know, that's just, it is what it is. And if you did sign him back with what even you have, you know, even the little holes, you know, whatever center field ends up being, or if you're just going to kind of roll the dice with Suarez at third base, you still have him, Votto, who's still, you know, Votto might not be 21 Votto, but he's still going to be pretty darn good. You've got obviously, India at second. I mean, you've got a nice core of players with obviously some, you know, with Hunter Green coming up.
Yes,
I mean, there's a lot of stuff to get excited about. You know, just adding that one, you know, a little stability in that right field position with someone that good, it would, you know, you've got a pretty darn good team, you know, with obviously relief, again, not a whole nother conversation, but it's not, you don't have to squint that hard to say like these guys can really do something, you know?
That's what frustrates me about the idea that they may not kind of go quote unquote all in, is that you're right. There is a real core here, and especially if you bring Castellanos back, and you've got these guys that are on the verge in the minor leagues of being legitimate contributors on the big league level. It's a situation where an ownership that was serious about winning could say, okay, we're going to spend a little bit of money. Yeah, we screwed up with Moustakas probably, and who knows what happened with Suarez, but we're going to spend a little bit of money because we are really on the precipice of an opportunity to be a team that can win the National Central Division for the next 2-3 years or more. And I'm not sure that Phil Castellini's all in, you know. Every time you play the board game Monopoly, you got some jerk that always wants to say, you got to spend money to make money, you know. And it's true, though. But Phil Castellini's the guy that, you know, hangs on to Baltic Avenue, and that's all he wants. Yeah, he may go for the railroads, but that's it. He's not going to buy a boardwalk. Come on. I don't know where that was going, but it's late in the evening, and I'm confused about what's going on in Cincinnati. And you're confusing me more because you're trying to give me optimism, and I don't appreciate it, my man. I got to tell you, I don't appreciate it.
That's what I'm here for. That's right. Yeah. Dr. Freakbase, call me. I'm planning another show, yes.
There you go. Can we, just briefly here, can we have a requiem for Tucker Barnhart? Because that guy's had a good Reds career. I think he's a Reds Hall of Famer. Two gold gloves and just – what I saw from him this past year, where he was really, truly, genuinely trying to mentor Tyler Stevenson, who he had to know was his replacement.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of Tucker Barnhart, and not just because he's been on the podcast 2 or 3 times, but just because I think that guy's exactly the type of guy I want to root for. Any thoughts on Tucker Barnhart?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm sure a lot of people think that, like I do. I think, you know, he'll probably end up being a manager someday, and you know, who knows, maybe for the Cincinnati Reds. And he's just, again, we talked about Castellanos being, you know, Cincinnati. He's very Cincinnati too, in terms of, you know, his work ethic, the way that he just took up the mantle. You know, when Mesoraco went down, you know, that was a very turbulent period right there. When he started having all those injuries, which was a shame, but for him to kind of step up the way that he did, especially, I mean, defensively, the guy is still, and still is nails. And you said it, I mean, he's going to be, you know, he's going to be playing baseball for probably at least another, you know, maybe 10 years, who knows, at least another 5 to 7 years for sure, with another, obviously, he went to Detroit, right? Isn't that right? To the Tigers, right?
Yes.
You know, it was a shame, again, you know, to read it, it was a shame to see him leave, but, you know, it wasn't a huge surprise, though.
No, it wasn't a surprise, but I don't know. Just I've never once. I wish he hit better sometimes, maybe, but never once disliked the fact that he was on the Reds, right? You know, he always acquitted himself well, and Godspeed to him. I guess is the only reason I wanted to talk about him a little more.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
All right, so you and I haven't spoken, I don't think, about the you know, the Kyle Bodie things that went on. You know, Kyle Bodie, director of pitching, was released. And I do want to talk just quickly about the Reds did announce that Derek Johnson, the pitching coach, is now going to be the director of pitching for the organization. And, you know, it's a situation where I love Derek Johnson as a pitching coach. And, you know, having him as the director of pitching seems to be a great thing. But I was very frustrated with the fact that that Kyle Bodie left because of what it portended. But I was worried that Derek Johnson was also going to leave. So, you know, maybe he's sticking around along with David Bell. We can talk about David Bell in a moment as well, maybe. But any thoughts? And you may not. I didn't prepare you for this topic, but about Derek Johnson. And I'm glad he's back.
Yeah, and I thought it was a good move that they, you know, I mean, not only did they give him that new title, but they also extended him at the same time, didn't they?
They did, and more responsibilities.
Yeah,
and
yeah, so I mean that's a good sign, you know. Obviously, the starting pitching was one of our biggest strengths, obviously, this year, and we've got some, you know, potential superstar starters coming up, you know, so it's good to know that they're going to have that umbrella through their whole development, even when they make that big leap into the big league. So that was very reassuring, especially with all the other kind of, you know, behind the scenes stuff that happened that you mentioned too as well. That was nice to see that there is that stability there. So yes, I think it's a great move.
Again, trying to look at it, hopefully. I love Derek Johnson, and it can't hurt to have him kind of leading the charge up and down the organization. But I still think, well, anyway, you've heard my thoughts on that. I'm not getting back into the Calvody thing. We got to leave it behind, man. We got to look forward.
No, quickly on him real quick. Now, he was with Milwaukee, right, before he came with us, right? Wasn't he with Milwaukee?
He was, yes.
Why did they leave it, let him go? I mean, was it just strictly money, I guess? I guess that's like anything. But, I mean, like, how did we get him over here, you know? I mean, I know that was a Dick Williams thing, right, I'm sure, because he was still at that point. Mm-hmm. But still, it's I'm just still kind of pinch myself when it's like, you know, why did Milwaukee even let him walk?
It was within that period of about 18 to 24 months when Dick Williams was kind of given free rein to actually acquire players and to acquire, coaches. The fact of the matter is that period there where they got Derek Johnson was as optimistic as I've probably been as a Reds fan since, you know, probably early to mid 90s. Frankly.
Right, right.
I don't know. After they got Junior Griffey, man, I was pretty optimistic.
Like we all were. Yep.
Yeah. But it was a time when the Reds were actually trying for a brief period of time, and I don't know, it seems like it's kind of gone off the rails a little bit in some ways. But he's a big time asset to the organization. Glad he's back.
The one thing you know about Nick Kroll too, and again, I know there's some word salad that kind of goes on there every once in a while, but the one like things even within his statements that I do find encouraging is, you know, how much they're putting emphasis on scouting and development. And I remember years ago, that was one thing that the Reds, you know, didn't have any, you know, that was something that they never seemed to pay attention to at all. You know, especially when I was a kid, it was like, you know, it was always just go out and try to get the next superstar or the guy that was a superstar a couple years ago, trying to get him over here now, you know. And it seems at least what they're saying publicly, you know, and even, you know, obviously with people coming up like Jonathan India and obviously Hunter Green and like, you know, it's at least seems like there's a more emphasis on that. So the pipeline is at least always kind of putting out new talent, you know, which is encouraging, you know?
Yes. I mean, certainly Marge Schott back in the day. Why do I have so many scouts? All they do is watch baseball games.
right.
The worst quote ever. But I think probably the flip side to that argument, just to push back maybe just a little bit, is that, well, that's an easy thing to say. When you're not going to spend money on the big leaguers, tell the fans that you're going to focus on scouting and development.
Sure, I get it.
And they got rid of C.J. Gilman, the hitting coordinator, and Kyle Bodie, the pitching coordinator, who were focusing on developing and had done a good job, by all appearances. But also, you know, I just think that what we saw during that Dick Williams era was that for a brief period of time, they did focus on the minor leagues. And that's what we're seeing the fruits of now. You're right, man. We're really seeing the fruits of it here in the next couple of years. I think we will.
Yeah,
but they also paid attention to the big league club as well for a very brief period of time, and they didn't last, obviously. But I think Kroll, and I poke fun at him probably more than I should, because I think he's a genuinely good guy. I think he's a smart guy, and I think he is. I actually think he's probably capable of doing this job. Even he's not capable of the PR side of it. He can't.
Right, right,
he can't
sure.
talk. He's bad at talking, as we say. But I've talked to him enough to know, and I've talked to other people that know him enough to know that he's not an idiot. He's not incompetent.
Of course.
I think he's being hamstrung, and he's having difficulty navigating the Phil Castellini side of it. I hope they really do genuinely put real focus on the minor leagues going forward, because that may be our only way to get talent. And the next 2-3 years, we've got some real talent coming through. So,
oh, yeah.
And I keep saying Dick Williams. Can I just say this? I keep saying Dick Williams did this and Dick Williams did that. He didn't make every right decision, you know? He signed Mike Moustakas. He made some bad moves, too. But at least the Reds were trying, I felt like, at that time. So,
Real quick, and I don't know if we're jumping off the subject, and I'm steering in a different direction, but I am curious, what do you, in terms of third base, I mean, you know, obviously Suarez had the decent September. I mean, is that, if you were a betting man, or is that kind of where you're thinking that's probably going to be, he's going to be, Suarez will be the starting third baseman versus Moustakas?
Boy, it's tough to say. I think, yeah, probably coming into the season. It's interesting because they signed Moustakas that four-year deal, you know, big money for Cincinnati. And I don't know where you play him. I don't know how you play him
next year.
Unless he beats out, quote-unquote, Suarez for third. I think those guys are kind of in a competition because I don't see him going out and getting anyone.
Right.
I think I probably lean towards Suarez. I'm not particularly, you know, I don't particularly believe after Suarez's good September. I want to believe because I love that guy more than just about any Reds player in the last 20 years. But it's kind of, you know, you're going to have to prove it to us. But I would give him a slight edge. What would you do if you were making the decision going into spring training?
I mean, the same. I mean, I think, you know, I would think that, you know, with the whole thing with the beginning of the year starting off at shortstop and then getting moved back and kind of bounced around a little bit. You know, I know there are professional league ball players, but that's got to mentally do a little bit something to you, you would think. And, you know, I mean, obviously that was a long period of getting comfort over at third because he'd been playing third for a while before he started kind of hitting again, obviously. But still, you know, I mean, obviously it was very encouraging at least to see that in September, at least where it felt like he at least figured it out back again. So, you know, that's the direction I would leave. And then obviously Moustakas, obviously there's the injury question too, you know, so it seems like he has, unfortunately has, you know, a hard time staying healthy, you know, too, as well. And the clubhouse, you know, and we don't know what's going on in the clubhouse, obviously, but I mean, you can see Suarez, I mean, he's like, I mean, of all the Reds, he's the guy that I'd want to go hang out with. You know what I mean? In terms of like his positivity about the, but, you know, so there's that aspect which he's got going for him too, as well. You know.
Yeah, and I'm sure he's a key guy in that clubhouse. Yeah, I think that this, it makes sense. That he probably has a slight edge. Moustakas, I don't know what there is to recommend him for that. The fact of the matter is, Moustakas has had a good major league career, but he's never really been that much above 500, above average in his career in terms of he's been slightly above average when he was at his best, and so he helps the team. And he was, and I was glad they signed him. I thought he could be good at second base, but the Reds, you know, they don't need a second baseman now; they need a third baseman. And at least Suarez has been an all-star level third baseman, and he's going to be 30 next year, but so he's younger than Moustakas. I don't know. I want to believe that September was the return, the resurgence, right?
Right.
And about second base, let's talk about Jonathan India for a moment because that's some of the news that we had this the last couple of weeks that we need to talk about. Is Jonathan India has been named a finalist for National League Rookie of the Year, which is the thing they do these days, and he also Baseball America gave out a Rookie of the Year award. They gave it to Jonathan India, and that was an award for both American and National League. They gave out one award, Jonathan India. The players, the Baseball Players Association gave out their awards, and he was named Most Outstanding Rookie in the National League as voted on by the other players in the league. So he's gotten two. He's probably going to win the Rookie of the Year award, and just, man, I speculated before the season that he wasn't ready. I'm so glad. Well, I said that I didn't know that he was ready yet. I'm so glad that he showed me he was ready because, man, what a season. I love that guy.
Oh, man. I mean, I mean, we could spend a whole podcast just talking just about him. I mean, he was just when they made the move, David Bell moved him to the, you know, the starting position at, you know, or leadoff position, excuse me. And, you know, everybody was a little nervous of how that was going to go, and he just, you know, embraced it and just, he's just such a ball player. I mean, so, you know, no matter what about this past year, and he's one of the biggest reasons for that. This has been one of the most fun teams to watch in a long time, including teams that have made the playoffs in the last 10 or 15 years. You know, I mean, 2010 is maybe the closest team where I had the most fun watching, you know, back when Jay Bruce and Votto were having their heyday, but the, but still, this team was pretty darn fun, and he was such a huge part of that because it's every time he came to bat or got on base, you just knew that something was gonna happen. You know, he's just so exciting to watch. I mean, I just love watching the guy. You know,
yeah, absolutely. You know, I've got friends who have younger children, and almost every single one of them. Jonathan is those kids' favorite player. He's like the favorite for kids in Cincinnati these days, and that's good to have something for the kids to get excited about with the Reds. It's kind of rare.
And he's got such a cool name too. I mean, you love seeing India on the back of the jerseys. That
sure.
So cool, you know. And it's I mean, you want to talk? We were talking earlier about Castellanos as a marketing machine. I mean, this guy. I mean, you know, he's tailor made for that. You know, you can market the whole team around that guy, you know, especially, you know, Votto's obviously, was Votto got what, 2 years left, years left? It's getting close, right?
Yeah.
Real quick question on a side note. Do you think after his contract runs out, you think, I mean, I know it depends partially on how he's playing physically at that point, but do you think at this point Votto will, his whole career will be in Cincinnati, or do you think he'll go back to, like, say, a Toronto and play a year, just to go home and play hometown type thing? You know what I mean?
That's really interesting. And before this season, I thought this answer would be easy. After he played so well this year, I'm not sure the answer is easy. After he finishes out his career in Cincinnati, could he still be good for a year or two as a DH, for example?
Right.
Oh, I don't want to think about that, man. Why do you mention that?
I'm sorry. I'll keep it positive. Sorry.
Yeah, I was getting ready to have a big conversation about Jonathan India is actually a hippie, and he shouldn't be the face of the Reds. And you took me a different direction. No, I love Jonathan India, and I love Joey Votto, and I'm so jealous about India's hair. It's glorious.
As long as they don't do the remember the Bronson Arroyo, remember the cap with the hair thing? Yeah.
So. I'd forgotten about that. Yeah, the giveaway.
I've got one of those around here somewhere, which is sad. I collect all that stuff, but it's...
That's awesome.
Yeah, as long as we don't get that, I'll be happy. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, you've hurt my feelings about Votto. I hadn't even considered that possibility, so... Oh, good grief. But Jonathan India probably going to win National League Rookie of the Year. Quick trivia time. Can you tell me the last two Reds to win Rookie of the Year?
No, I
know. That's not fair, right? It's not fair.
It's not. It isn't fair, yeah.
I'll tell you the seasons. Maybe this will help.
Okay.
1999.
Oh, I do. 1999, I do know. Scott Williamson, right?
Scott Williamson. 2.41 ERA. Made the National League All-Star team. 23 years old. Rookie of the Year. And before that, you'll get this one too, I bet. 1988.
Sabo?
Chris Sabo. See, you won the trivia contest.
Wow.
Chris Sabo also made the All-Star team that season. So hopefully it'll be Jonathan India next.
That's wild.
All right. You know, anything else about the Reds that we've kind of covered most of the things I had listed to talk about. Anything else specifically about the Reds that you want to talk about?
Well, I mean, real quickly, I mean, you know, with all the moves that needed to happen, I mean, the winter meetings, I'm assuming, are still coming. Aren't they like that first week of December?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that right? Yeah. So, you know, hopefully we'll see some, you know, hopefully your whatever your December 10th podcast or whatever it is, or your new show by then, you'll have some good news to talk about on that, you know?
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, we're kind of timing it with the winter meetings, but now if there's a work stoppage, and there might be, it could mean that the winter meetings don't happen for the big league clubs.
Mm. When is the cutoff day on that? Is that coming up soon?
I think it might be December 1. I saw the other day. I'm not sure. So it's coming up very soon. So, yeah, but hopefully. Speaking of which, you know, we're going to launch a new version of the podcast, and I can't wait to get you on here in living color, in video.
I can't wait either. I'm super excited about that. I'm very happy you guys are doing that. I mean, it's you and I talked about it before we went on air tonight. It's the wave of the future here on these internets. So everything's video now. So that makes sense that you guys are doing that. That's good. Yeah.
Do you think there's any chance that this the YouTube channel for this podcast or whatever, our video podcast, can be nearly as exciting as the Freak-based Twitch stream?
That's gonna, you know, I'm new to the Twitch thing. I'm fairly, I just started it, but I'm digging it. You know, I love that because it's instant interaction. You're actually talking to people right there too as well. But the best thing about you know, my favorite thing about your new show, you're getting ready to start. There were nobody can ever come back to you ever and give you a hard time about viewer mail ever again.
I held off for so long because this is such a dumb joke that I always make, but now it's going to be, we actually are going to have viewers. It's ridiculous.
That's right. Yeah. See, you saw the future. You saw the future before even, what's the Facebook guy's name? The Zuckerberg guy. You knew it was happening before even he did.
I knew we were going there eventually. There you go. I wish I could say that was the case, but
yeah.
Now, one of the things, the biggest reason I think that I, like talking baseball with you. It's like we're roughly the same age. We got some similar experiences, but we also enjoy talking a lot about movies. And you're more of a comic book guy than I am.
I am, and
we go back and forth on that. I think you're probably right about in your opinions about comic book movies, and you've educated me some. But something we sort of discovered recently is that we both have a real affinity for the James Bond series. And so I want to very briefly, I want to talk about the new movie, and it was actually your idea to talk about it tonight, and I want to get your thoughts about it, and just your thoughts about James Bond, the series period. Any initial thoughts before we dig into their most recent movie?
Well, just like, you know, you asked me right at the beginning of this podcast about, you know, my love and affinity for the Reds, James Bond's been like that. My mom too, as well. I mean, she had me watching it. Even that she was more, I was kind of more grew up and more in the Roger Moore era when I was a kid. She turned me on to all the Sean Connery stuff. Thank God. You know, I didn't even know there was a Roger Moore, even that was the era that I should have known. I knew more of the Sean Connery stuff because of my mom.
Perfect.
And so that's what got me hooked. You know, I mean, I remember, you know, for almost from the time I could talk, I remember, you know, the classic lines, do you expect me to talk? No, I expect you to die, Mr. Bond. You know,
from Goldfinger,
lines
right?
Like that, from Goldfinger, right, an odd job, and so on. You know, you know, all those classic themes. I mean, I even had I don't know if I even told you this, not or Chad, or if you know this or not, but I had a band I toured with about 7-8 years ago called The Band Is Bond, and we did we did all the themes from James Bond. We never played Cincinnati. We played mostly East Coast, like we did New York a few times, Philadelphia, but. But we did had this amazing singer, Jennifer Hartswick, who tours with Trey Anastasio. She's just incredible pipes on her. So, and she just like destroyed all the female vocals. And it was such a fun gig. You know, it's learning all those songs. We didn't just learn the song from the soundtrack. But we'd actually learn like some of the musical scores too, and do some of those John Williams like dun 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 dun.
Oh, wow.
And, like, that stuff. So it was a really fun gig. So. Yeah, James Bond has always been a huge part of my my world, and
I had no idea. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's fun stuff, man. And so, you know, and the Daniel Craig thing, and you know, just like how I just fell in love with Batman so much more when Christopher Nolan took it over with The Dark Knight, mm-hmm. and that realistic take when the whole Daniel Craig era is just like. Brought it to just a whole nother level, and which, you know, I know we'll talk about this new movie here in a second, but you know, it was kind of sad to me because you went through I have a real hard time kind of getting through some of the Roger Moore films, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, I know you and I have joked about that, and you know, it felt like they were almost kind of trying to course correct with Timothy Dalton, and it was weird. And I mentioned this to you when we texted once, but like Timothy Dalton was such a weird era for the Bond thing because it felt like it was almost they were trying to do the Daniel Craig thing, but they had the writers still from the Roger Moore era.
Yeah.
Like they couldn't figure out which side of the fence they wanted to be on with him. And but yeah, for the last few years, you know, and I think the one thing too is so neat about these new Bond films now is the fact that it's the first time, you know, as opposed to each film being kind of like a standalone film, which is what kind of the precedent that was set before that there's like a connecting storyline between all these films, which is really, really cool. So anyway, that's my James Bond thing in a nutshell.
Yeah. I don't know that I like the fact that there's this kind of story that progresses between films so much. So I want to get into that, but I was going to ask you a different question, but you prompted a different one now. Okay. Let me think of another one, what's the best Bond theme? Since you did all those, what's your favorite of the Bond themes? I've got two.
My goodness. Yeah. I mean, they're all so damn good.
Goldfinger's my favorite.
Yeah. You can't miss with that one, obviously.
And what was the one that Paul McCartney did?
Oh, Live and Let Die.
Live and Let Die. Those are my two favorites.
Yeah, and that's actually in terms of the movie too. Of the Moore movies, that's one of the better ones. Like they didn't go full on silly yet at that point with him. It was only his first or I think The Man with the Golden Gun was first, and then that was the second one he did. So he hadn't gone. So yeah, that's one of the in terms of his era's better ones. Oh my gosh, I mean, I even love the Billy. You know, I know Billy Eilish is a controversial subject in Twitter world or whatever, but I like this new theme quite a bit. I'm not saying it's my favorite, but I love the, you know, I'll tell you one of my favorite ones you might not think of is is The World Is Not Enough by Garbage, which is so good. That's the movie wasn't great, but the song's really good. And you know, of course, Goldfinger, Diamonds Are Forever, you know, all the Shirley Bassey stuff. But but you know, and again, Skyfall, the Adele song.
I think of all the
modern songs, I think Skyfall is going to be the one that's going to be like the Goldfinger, where it's going to be 30 years from now, and that's one that's going to kind of last. The you know, it's going to have that longevity factor.
Agreed.
Of all of them.
So
I guess we'll probably go with those. Yeah.
So the question I was going to ask you again before we get into No Time to Die, and if you're not a Bond fan, maybe you just skip this. I don't know, but you should be a Bond fan. It's there's a lot to appreciate about this series. But here's my theory. I want to know if you agree with this. I ranked all the Bonds, the actors that portrayed Bond, and on Twitter at some point recently, and people yelled at me because that's what happens on Twitter. But right. But my thesis here is that there have been some bad Bond films, but every single actor that has portrayed James Bond has actually been a pretty good actor, been a pretty good Bond. I like all of them. Now, the Roger Moore era Bonds were largely, other than The Spy Who Loves Me, is just not great, frankly.
Yeah.
Because they were so campy and they were just over the top, right. Just trying to be silly. And so the scripts weren't good. Roger Moore was a pretty good Bond until he got too old maybe for the role. We can debate that. But I think every single actor that's portrayed Bond, I think they've all been pretty good. Now, do you disagree with that? Or there's some that, I mean, obviously there's some that I like more than others, but I think even the worst, who was Roger Moore to me, was pretty good as Bond. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, they're all accomplished actors, obviously. You know, obviously Connery and Daniel Craig those are the two.
That's my top two.
Yeah, me too. And those would be really hard. I mean, you know, I could flip a coin and one day I'd say one and then one day I'd say the other, you know, in terms of who is my favorite Bond or who is the best Bond. Obviously, Connery had the big advantage of, when I think of James Bond in terms of the era for James Bond, I think early 60s Mad Men era. So he kind of had that advantage of actually living through that era, you know, like with the whole Art Deco look of everything and the way the cars
sure.
looked and the skinny ties and so on and so on. Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think all of them, you know, again, Roger Moore is a tough one, but tough more just because he was given some pretty crappy scripts, obviously, to work with.
Yeah, not his fault.
But not his fault. Yeah, definitely. And you know, he definitely has some really amazing moments, you know, too, as well. The thing that I think that the reason, not just the acting talent and the scripts that both Connery and Craig both have above the other Bonds that have been in the series, but both those guys, I feel like they could in real life be assassins, which is what James Bond, especially Daniel Craig, of course, but like even Sean Connery. I mean, Sean Connery was, I think he was like an Olympic swimmer or something like that. I mean, you really, if he got into some of those fights, it felt believable. Like, where Pierce Brosnan, I mean, I loved him as an actor, and he had the suave aspect of James Bond, but some of those fights that he got into, I'm like, I'm not really sure if you could take that guy or not. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, absolutely. I've been doing a rewatch, and I'm up to the Craig era now, and I've seen all up to Craig's first film, Casino Royale, and what came across to me was that they're all these actors are pretty good in the role. They do a pretty good job, but that the most underrated actor, to me, I guess we could say George Lazenby, who was in Her Majesty's Secret Service in just one role. I love that movie, and he was good in it, but I think Timothy Dalton was kind of underrated as a Bond. The movies that he was in were better than, maybe it's just because I was comparing him to the Roger Moore era Bonds that I'd seen before that, you know, because I've been watching them systematically, but
right.
I think he gets a bad rap in some ways. I think he was okay.
Yeah, I agree. Well, he did two, right?
He did
right?
two. He did License two. To Kill. Well, first was The Living Daylights and then License to Kill.
Yeah, and License to Kill, especially, if I remember, I mean, it's been a while since I've seen it, but I remember that being pretty good and the villain was good in it too, as well. Obviously, which is such a huge part of the Bond thing is how good the villains are.
No, it was great.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. I think he was, and I was actually a little surprised that you know, I don't know why his contract was. I mean, obviously, maybe they weren't making the kind of box office that they were expecting with him. But I was kind of a little surprised when he only did two. I thought he would have lasted at least four. You know.
Yeah. Well, maybe it was just that they had an opportunity to get Pierce Brosnan, who they wanted to get before they got.
Right.
Timothy Dalton, but he was tied up on a television program.
Right.
You and I've talked about doing a podcast on these. We need to do a deep dive into Bond. But let's talk quickly about No Time to Die, because see, clearly we need to have podcasts. We're talking too much about this. We got too much to say. But No Time to Die, the most recent James Bond film. We may have a spoiler here later. I'll warn you before we give that spoiler about what happens at the very end.
Yeah, it's a big one.
It is, but I get the sense that you're all in on Daniel Craig, and so I'm guessing you probably really liked No Time to Die.
I did, and just not all of Daniel Craig. Quantum of Solace, I wasn't a fan of at all, you know, and that was a tough one to get.
It was not good.
To be honest with you. Yeah, it wasn't. And now on the flip side, Casino Royale, which is his first one, is probably my favorite of all of them. Yes, I did. I really like this one a lot. And I've watched it twice now too. I did a rewatch of it, and it's even better the second time. Phoebe Waller, who was a big writer on it, she writes, there's a show on,
yeah.
I don't know if your viewers watch Fleabag, you know, she's super talented and just like the cinematography. I mean, it really, everything that you think of James and the way that they, you know, again, I'm not going to give the spoiler yet because I know you're saving that, but like the way they even tied, you know, you brought up George Lazenby, you know, the way they tied in that, you know, the song, we're talking about songs, you know, the Louis Armstrong song and that the way they pulled that in.
There were several places where they kind of gave callbacks. If you really love Bond, you're going to kind of see these callbacks to previous versions.
Yeah, and even the most kind of tongue-in-cheek I've ever seen Daniel Craig, but, you know, he did a couple of those one-liners, which I was kind of like, oh, I've never seen him actually do that before, kind of a little Sean Connery-ish little action going on there and a couple little things. Right from the beginning, that opening sequence, you know, which a lot of the opening sequence was in the trailer, you know, with the whole thing with the car and everything and jumping off the bridge and the motorcycle and all that stuff. But still, my goodness,
it was fun.
Like, oh gosh, yeah, so good, yeah, yeah. And but I don't know, what's your, you know, long story short is I would say just real quickly in terms of the Daniel Craig era. You know, I would have said Casino Royale, then Skyfall definitely second, but it's kind of, for me, it's actually knocked Skyfall to third for me. So it's like, you know, obviously Casino Royale, then No Time to Die, then Skyfall 3 in terms of that era. Yeah.
Interesting. And that's a question I was going to ask you. How do we rank the Craig era Bonds? Because for me, Skyfall's number one by far to me.
Above Casino Royale?
Above Casino Royale. I've got Casino Royale 2, and No Time to Die is kind of in there with... oh goodness, which
Spectre.
It's ahead of Spectre, I think.
Yeah.
And so
I like Spectre. Spectre got a little bit of a bad rap. I mean, the only one that I thought was crappy was Quantum of Solace.
Oh, that's
absolutely
true.
Yeah,
that's true. I agree. I like Spectre. The fact of the matter is, if you have not seen No Time to Die yet, I would suggest you actually watch Spectre.
You almost have to in a way. I mean, yeah
I hadn't
very
watched
important.
It since it came out, and so I wished I had rewatched it to kind of, because you kind of need to know this is the thing that this most recent installment does more than any other Bond film ever, really, which is just it's like a continuing storyline. And I gotta be honest, I'm sick of hearing about Vesper Lynd. You know, I mean, let's have a new story. But No Time to Die is very good. I think it's number three probably in the Craig era Bonds, which means it's incredibly fun. And you're right, he's got a little bit of that, the one-liners, a little bit of the, you know, humor, which they have to. I feel in Quantum of Solace particularly, they're trying to make a modern action movie, and they went away from some of the things that make me love Bond, which are some of those one-liners. But they also,
yeah.
but what the Craig era got right is that you can do some of that stuff. You can do the, you know, Bond, James Bond, you know, Shaken, Not Stirred, all those things,
right?
While
right.
also having a modern action thriller that makes you really care about the characters. And you know, No Time to Die, I loved it. I've only seen it the one time. I want to see it again. I really did enjoy it. You know, I get 4 stars out of 5. I think that Daniel Craig is really good in it.
Rami Malek as a villain.
Well, I was going to say, I'm not sure. I think I'm still irritated that he stole a Best Actor Oscar.
For Freddie Mercury, yeah.
For playing Freddie Mercury. He didn't deserve that Oscar just because he looked like Freddie Mercury, but he's fine. I don't know that he's given enough to do to really make him a great Bond villain, but he was fine.
Right, right.
He's not Blofeld, although we did get some Blofeld in this one. My thought was the best part of this film, by far, and I do encourage everyone to go see it if you haven't seen it yet, I don't think it's even close. The scene when they're in Cuba, I think they're in Cuba, with Bond and Ana de Armas' character.
Oh, right. Right.
That was, there was like 20 minutes there. That's all you saw her, but it was like the best 20 minutes of the film. I mean, it was really incredible.
Yeah, that was a great, great scene. Yeah, yeah, and she was great in it too as well. And just even like the scene within the party, the direction in that whole part was just incredible. Yeah,
perfect. Yeah, perfect. You know, Lea Seydoux is good in this movie. I like how they started out kind of with her story. In the home with her mother. Yep. And it was interesting. I was like, what is going on here? This is not Bond. This is not a Bond opening scene.
I thought that was a cool thing to start with her as opposed to a scene with him, you know? Yeah, I thought that was great too. Yeah.
I got to say though, it's only the second best movie I've seen her in 2021, Lea Seydoux.
Oh, I don't know her repertoire as well. What is she in?
She's been in a couple, I think, of Tarantino films, but this year she was in The French Dispatch, the best movie I've seen this year. Wes Anderson. I can't get anybody to do a Wes Anderson podcast with me, but yeah, she's good in that. But anyway, so yeah, Christoph Waltz is in it. I guess now let's talk about this ending, because I want your take on this ending and what it means for the Bond franchise. So this is a spoiler alert right here. You know, you go forward a couple minutes, it's, I don't know, 5 minutes, maybe just stop listening, period, until you've seen the movie. But we're going to do some spoilers, and I know people on the interwebs hate spoilers, so I'm warning you.
Yeah.
Okay, now you've had a chance to turn it off.
We're over the spoiler wall. Yes.
At the end, James Bond dies. What are your thoughts about ending the movie with James Bond actually dying?
Well, I mean, there's also another spoiler that you haven't brought up yet. Also, he's got a kid. He's got a kid too.
He's got a child coming.
Yes. Yeah. So,
or not coming, but yeah. The child was his. Yes.
With deep blue eyes, just like Daniel Craig.
I saw that coming, but
You did. I think that kind of got me. I mean, I'm usually pretty good at predicting stuff, but that was kind of, you know, that was a nice little twist, I thought. Yeah. But on second watching, I liked it even more. You know, it was startling at first, you know, because usually always those, you know how it is with James Bond. Even if that missile could have been 2 feet from the island, he'd figure out a way to get out of it, or he'd talk to Q and Q would have told him just to do this and you get rid of the nanobots or whatever they were called.
Right.
And so it was a little startling at first, but it with the Craig era, it almost, you know,
it was the way it had to end.
It almost had to end that way for him, you know, cause he was, yeah, it felt with the way that it was a continuing storyline. It fit, you know, it felt right. And then obviously if you know, like anybody, if you watch, you know, all the credits at the end, we do get the James Bond will return. It doesn't say 007 will return.
Right.
It says James Bond will return. So, you know, obviously there's going to be a whole new recasting and you know, retelling of the story again, which, but yeah, I think, you know, it was startling at first, but on second watching, it sat okay with me. Well, what about you?
Yeah, and I want to talk about what comes next, certainly. To me, I don't know. I didn't get a spoiler, but I saw something. I try to stay away for these movies that I like. Again, The French Dispatch, Wes Anderson. I stayed away from trailers. I didn't want to see anything. With No Time to Die, even though it was like 2 years between when it was supposed to come out.
Right, right, right.
I tried to stay away from all that, but I saw something that made me think, is he going to die at the end of this? I don't know I don't remember what it was. Some tweet.
Right.
But my thoughts are, well, like I said, this arc of James Bond, Daniel Craig as James Bond, it might be where it had to end, because the reason that he died to me was he was never going to be able to touch that child. You know, because it was like a selfless act. Like, he chose to die. He could have gotten out of it. James Bond always gets out of it. He could have gotten out of it. But is it worth? Is it, you know, if I can't touch my child, I don't know. That's what, I guess, as a parent, and you'll understand this, that's what kind of not appealed to me, but that's where my mind went. So,
well, and also I think the idea of not just physically touching them, but also the idea of like, do I know how my lifestyle is and how I, you know, you saw in the course of this movie how easy he got pulled back into what he was doing, even that he was trying to walk away from it. do I want this my child to be, or, you know,
is it fair? Right?
Am I putting my child in danger constantly, me being around? You know, yeah. It's almost kind of like the going back to the superhero you know, the reason why some of the superheroes wear masks, it's to protect the people that they're around. So I'm sure there's a little bit of that going through his head, the character's head, or at least the thought of doing it with the character, that they're not putting the, as the kid gets older, they're not putting it in danger constantly because of his past, you know, past life.
We're going way deeper into this than I actually expected we would on this podcast. So
I know.
Everybody quit listening, but I don't care. I'm enjoying it. This is maybe evidence that we need to do a podcast specifically.
I'm down. I've told you. I'm all about it.
We need to try to flesh that out and figure out how it'll work. But I want to talk about what comes next, because there are a couple ways the Bond franchise could go with this, more than a couple, which is that they could just kind of just do what Bond has always done. There's a new guy, and we don't reference what happened before. You know, and if they do that, we can talk about who we think should play that role. They could play it as, oh, James Bond 007 has died, but here's our new 007. And this movie, again, that's a spoiler, but there's a new 007 in this one. And her name was,
Oh, right. I know you're talking about. Yeah, the actress that played. Yeah, she was also in Captain Marvel, too, as well.
I think it's Lashana Lynch, I think, is her name.
Yeah, that is correct. Yeah. I'm 90% sure that's it. Yep.
And so she was good, you know, certainly literally the opposite of the traditional James Bond in every way.
Sure. Yep.
And so they could do that. Where do they go? You know, Daniel Craig came out and said, well, you know, I think James Bond needs to keep going, and kind of because that's who James Bond is, needs to be a guy, but why can't we go in a different direction as well? My thought was, because I think about this Marvel Universe stuff, is why don't they have a series with a 001, 002, 003, 004, 005, 006, and they can kind of create this big universe with these agents doing things all around the world. To me, that would be an incredible cinematic universe, and they could intersect with whoever the next James Bond is.
Yeah,
I don't know. That was my thought. You have any thoughts about what comes next, given that that he died?
I never thought of that. That's almost like, especially if there was like, you know, if they could cut like almost like whatever the streaming equivalent. What Bond's Universal, right? I think that's who did put out the Bond flicks. I think it's Universal.
It's actually Bond. Warner Brothers, and they were just bought by Amazon. Amazon owns the Bond franchise now.
So that's going to be streaming soon. That's good to know. So that's right. That's right. That makes sense. So. You know, if they did the type of thing like Disney Plus is doing with the Star Wars universe, right, where they could actually make those streaming series. Yeah. And then maybe just save just the 007 ones for the actual cinematic, you know, type things, you know, almost like a Mandalorian versus Star Wars type thing. So, it's interesting. But I have a tendency to think they're going to play it a little more conservative than that. I mean, I could be wrong, but the Broccoli's have been, you know, it's been in that family forever. And I have a feeling they're like, if it's not broke, don't fix it kind of situation. You know, I mean, from last I checked before we went on air a few days ago, they were, you know, the it's making mass bank right now, especially over. I mean, it's doing well in the States, but it's doing like crazy over in the UK right now. Yeah, and across seas. So it's going to be, in terms of like box office, it's going to be, especially in the, you know, the pandemic era, you know, it's going to do very good numbers. So I think that my guess would they would still just straight up just recast, you know, a new James Bond, you know, and they're going to do, you know, they'll you know, they will make it, I'm sure, some huge, it'll probably be the biggest rollout that we've ever seen, because even when Craig got cast, yeah, it was internet era, but it was what, 2004, 2005, I think Casino Royale came out 2006. So it was still, you know, social media wasn't where it was even today, you know, so, but with that said, let me ask you then, let me turn the tables on you. If they do recast James Bond, well, they're obviously recasting them. Do you have any thoughts on, you know, who's your favorite? Who it's going to be?
You know, I've been saying this for a while. And because I wasn't sure that Craig was going to come back for this one. And so I've had my thoughts on who it should be. And this is one name that was mentioned. He may be too old to start being Bond at this point. I don't know. But to me, Idris Elba would have been an amazing James Bond. And I don't think it's going to happen at this point. But to me, that was the guy that I really wanted to see.
I would love that too. Yeah. I think the only thing, like you said already, I think it's just age is the only thing that's going against them, because they obviously want to sign them for 4, 5, 6 movies, you know?
Yeah,
so, right. And he's, I think, in his early 50s now, which is about what Craig is. So, I think Craig started probably in his like late 30s, very early 40s. So, So that would be the only thing. I mean, I've heard Tom Hardy before, which I don't really see that, but I mean, he's a great actor, you know. Of course, the Henry Cavill is the thing that I hear a lot of, but
I love
Henry Cavill. I just don't know if he's got the acting chops for
it. I don't see it.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, I mean, I love him. Believe me, I love him as Superman. I mean, he was like cut from, you know, the tailor-made for that role, but you know, I've seen him in other things, and it's not like he's a terrible actor. It's kind of like almost like it's the role's got to kind of fit him for it to work. He was even good in Mission Impossible. I thought he was good in that, but he was like, it's got to kind of fit his thing. I just don't. There's so much depth to the way that they're doing Bond right now, and obviously Craig is an amazing actor, and so was Connery. Obviously, Connery won an Academy Award for The Untouchables years later, so they're all, like you mentioned right when we first started having this conversation, how good the, no matter how what the films were, the actors were all still really good. So, you know, I know I'd mentioned to you, and he's kind of right on the bubble of the age. I think he's probably in his probably mid-40s right now, I'm guessing, is Michael Fassbender. That's who I see.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know.
He'd be fantastic because he's got the acting chops, right?
He's got the acting chops. He's that perfect combination of handsome but yet still kind of a little bit rugged, a little bit crazy looking like Craig has, you know, like you're not sure which way he's going to go, like an assassin type thing. I would love to see him in the role. And I think he's at the right age where he could at least get at least 3 or 4 movies under his belt and it would still be believable.
Yeah, they got these betting odds, and Tom Hardy leads. And I like Tom Hardy.
I do too. Yeah.
I loved him in Peaky Blinders, you know. He's great in everything, but I'm not sure I see it. Another guy that was mentioned was Richard Madden, who Game of Thrones.
Oh, and he's also in the Eternals, right?
He's now in the Eternals. Well, who did he play?
Right.
He was not Jon Snow in Game of Thrones. He was...
I'm actually not, believe it or not, not a Game of Thrones person.
Oh, I think
it's hard to say, but yeah.
I think it was Robb Stark. I'm probably wrong. Everybody will tell me, but and I could see him, I guess. But
I could kind of see him. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. He was in a show I really enjoyed that you can see on Netflix now called Medici. It's about the Medici family in Florence in the Renaissance. But he was great in that. Dustin Hoffman's in that. But anyway, but I think we probably agree that they're not going to go with Lashana Lynch. Who was in this most recent No Time to Die and seemed to be, I don't know if they were trying to present her as a possibility as a replacement or the next 007. I don't see it happening that she's going to be 007, but again, maybe there's some other future in a larger 007 universe.
Well, now my question is, like, if they do just kind of do a whole new kind of storyline, are they going to just put Bond out of it for a second? Are they going to recast everybody? You know, are we going to get a new Q and a new, Miss Moneypenny and M and everybody?
Ray Fiennes.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So yeah. That's another question, you know?
Well, they've never really completely rebooted like that. Right. You know, Judi Dench
right.
was the best M as far as I'm concerned. You know, she went from the Bond era to the Craig era, and
she did, didn't she? That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and Q began with Connery, I think, and went all the way up through Brosnan, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. They did carry over. I forgot. That's kind of like the little thing they do with the Bond. Yeah, so maybe they wouldn't do
we'll
that.
See.
You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's what I say. They need to have 008, and this is my hot take of the night. I think the most perfect, if we're talking about a female actor to play one of these special agents, I'm going all in. Give me Emily Blunt. If you got to have a 008 or a 006 or whatever, if you're doing
a separate one,
I think she'd be perfect. She's like the best actress. She's not just Mary Poppins, for those of you who don't know her. She's incredible. So anyway, I don't know. That was my proposition that... But I think it's got to be clearly me as the
I'm just really happy. Like, you never know. And like, you know, is Bond going to that's what's just so blow away. And I think I remember you doing a tweet about this or you were replying to someone's tweet once about a franchise the most successful movie franchise of all time or something like that. And just like, think about what did Dr. No come out? What, 62, 63, something like that,
I guess.
Yeah. And it's like, think about that, the, you know, 50 plus, you know, verging on 60 years. It's just, and everyone, I mean, I'm sure they've probably had, I don't think any of them have bomb. I mean, there might've been some that didn't do the box office like others, but it's like, amazing that it stood, you know, generations, and yeah. and it translates still, you know.
Yeah, still relevant. Still making money at the box office, and people care about who the next Bond is, and you know, I get a kick out of the franchise. I really enjoy this rewatch I've been trying to do of all the films. Before we go, we gotta get out of here. We could talk about this all night, and maybe we'll do that in the future. But can you give me maybe your top three Bond films of all time for people that aren't into the Bond? Where do we start? I can give you my top three, but if you want me to do that first, but can you tell me your top three?
I think to start with, this is not necessarily my favorite, but I would say start with Goldfinger would probably be number one.
That's
I would start
one.
With that, you know.
Agree.
Yeah,
that's my number one.
Yes, and then probably say Casino Royale number two.
I would say Skyfall number two. So, but we're the Craig era.
I'd probably have to choose another Daniel Craig. It would probably be either Skyfall or No Time to Die. So one of those two. Yeah. Which is weird. I thought two out of the three would have been Connery's if you would have asked me a while ago, but it's just, Craig is just, man, he's just so damn good at the role. It's pretty incredible.
Well, maybe if you're talking about trying to get a new fan into Bond, maybe you do go with Craig because they're different, but my third one probably from Russia with Love.
That's a great one too.
Is the second Bond film, and Sean Connery, and just incredible. So yeah,
Thunderball too. That's the one right after Goldfinger's is great too. That's a great villain in it and everything. You know, great theme song, everything. Tom
Fantastic.
Jones killing it. Yeah,
yeah. Oh, yeah. The worst Bond film of all time, and it's not even close in my mind. Moonraker. Only watch Moonraker if you're trying to watch all the Bond movies. That's my opinion.
That was like to compete with the, that was like during the whole Star Wars thing, wasn't it? Like to kind of compete with like the whole Star Wars fascination.
Yeah, let's send James Bond to space.
Yeah, yeah. Yeesh. That was pretty rough. Yeah. View to a Kill is pretty tough too as well. I love the theme song. I love Duran Duran, but the and I love Grace Jones and I love Christopher Walken, but it was verging on almost being a comedy.
It was. If you want to watch Roger Moore one, The Spy Who Loved Me, is legitimately one of the best Bond movies ever. It's really good.
Yeah.
But Moonraker, there was a pigeon in the movie that does a double take. It's ridiculous. It was just over the top. So.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, Freak Base, my man, this has been a blast, and I think this is proof of concept. We've gone longer than we really should have gone, but that we need to talk more about James Bond.
I'm ready and anytime. Yes,
all right.
Definitely.
Well, let's start drawing up the plan for how these episodes are going to go, I guess. But Funksgiving, November 26th. Go to Funks.
Friday, November 26th. Yep. Ludlow Garage.
Where can you get tickets?
Well, Ludlow, I think their website for Ludlow Garage, Ludlow Garage Cincinnati. You know, it's available at Ticketmaster. I mean, anywhere. You just do a Google search, you know, Freak Base, Funksgiving, Ludlow Garage. It'll come up. And, freakbase.com, which is the website, of course. They're available there, but I hope everybody can. I mean, it's going to be great to be playing back in Cincinnati. I think it's going to be a really fun night. I talked to the promoter a few days ago. He said tickets are selling really well and moving quick, so you know, if you're on the fence about it, you know, grab some up and come up and say hello and tell me in person who your favorite James Bond is.
Yes, absolutely. If you made it to the end of this massive episode. Yeah.
Right.
We need Red Leg Nation Radio to really make a good showing and go out and see Freak Base and Funksgiving. My man, this is always fun. I get a kick out of talking to you, and I got a feeling we're going to start doing this a little bit more often in the future.
Oh, I can't wait. Thanks, Chad.
All right. Well, this is episode number 399 of Red Leg Nation Radio. I want to thank our buddy Freak Base for joining us tonight. Go do Funksgiving. Get those tickets. Get out there. Go. And we're going to have a lot more for you coming with the Reds going forward. So for Freak Base and Arik Goldfinger, this is Chad Dotson saying, so long, everyone. Go!
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from redlegnation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app, and join us for discussion of all things Reds at redlegnation.com, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
So, you've got an idea for a business. The store of your dreams. There's just one thing to figure out. Everything. That's why Shopify's all-in-one commerce platform makes it easy to sell online, in person, and everywhere else. Sell on social media, source products with an app to get that first sale feeling. It's the only solution that gives you everything you need to sell everywhere you want. So when you're ready to bring your idea to life, power it up with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.